It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Editor-at-Large at Search ERP. Moving SAP to the cloud has been a challenge for SAP and its tens of thousands of customers. How is SAP doing? Why do some companies move to S/4HANA Cloud while others stay on-premises? For real-world experience and insight into SAP Cloud migration, I turn to Hanif Sarangi, CEO of Phoenix Business Consulting, an SAP partner. Thanks very much for joining us today. I'll jump right in by asking, what do people have to be willing to give up, if anything, in features and capabilities if they choose S/4HANA Cloud over the on-premises version of S/4HANA?
There's a couple of things that they're giving up. One is that with on-premise versions of SAP software, they're very customizable. You know, I could do virtually anything with an on-premise system. But now my cloud customers, they have to be willing to accept the best practice scenarios that are available in the system. They can't customize. If they're going from an on-premise to a cloud system, they're going to lose some functionality sometimes of what they're used to. So a lot of my customers have really tailored the system to particular business practices, and they have to standardize those business practices. The other thing is, and the importance of also making it standardized, is that four times a year, we're going to get patches being implemented by SAP. And if your system is too customized, the testing involved in making sure that that system works is going to be extensive. It'll be more of a headache than not. So just being the mindset of being willing to accept that your systems are going to be upgraded frequently and you have to basically test them, and that you lose some control of your maintenance of your systems. I have some customers who have large staff on site managing those systems, and losing that staff for the IT department is sometimes an issue. You know, they still like to keep control of their systems and so on. So they're basically going to give control of their systems over to SAP or a SaaS provider. They're going to have to stick with standardized business processes and basically live with their upgrades as they get them frequently. Those are just a few of the items that they're giving up.
Now, I understand that the different versions of S/4HANA have the same code base, but I think the SaaS version, S/4HANA Cloud, true S/4HANA Cloud, the SaaS version, I thought that it had, in some ways, fewer capabilities than S/4HANA. Can you kind of talk about that and if they differ in terms of capabilities?
Yes, on-premise versions of S/4HANA do have more capability. We are losing some specific functionality or ability to tailor the system when you go to SaaS versions. For example, I have a customer that probably is very unique. There's only about two or three businesses like it in the country. They grade comic books, they grade coins, they grade paper money, and so on. They have very specific business processes. They've got a system that they built over 25 years. They've got functionality specific to their grading process. And when I went there to meet with the customer, I tried to sell them the standard SaaS functionality because they're of the size where SaaS makes sense to implement, to pay for, to maintain. But when I looked at their business process, I said, we're never going to be able to fit this into SaaS. You need an on-premise version because they're so specific to their business process. I can't put them in a SaaS. It would involve too much customization, which I couldn't do. They ended up having to buy an on-premise system and then have it customized and build specific customization specifically for their businesses. I sold another system to an insurance company recently that's a SaaS, and they wanted something fast. They're not a huge insurance company, and typically I would have spent at a minimum $10 to $15 million implementing an insurance company easily on an on-premise system, even the cheapest ones. They're paying $1 to $2 million for the implementation, and it's being done in 6 months, and they're accepting the standard business processes. And, you know, it's mind-blowing for me, you know, having worked in the business for 30 years and seeing the pricing of implementations, to be able to tell an insurance company, I'm going to implement you in $1 million. They have millions of transactions flowing through the system. They have complicated business processes, lockboxes, integrations, and all that. And I'm doing it for somewhere between $1 million and $2 million, which is amazing.
That's such a fraction. And then the time difference too, I guess.
Honestly, if I were to sell them an on-premise system, I would be looking at a year and a half at a minimum. maybe 2-3 years over international locations and so on.
So just out of curiosity, that previous customer, when they figured out and you helped them figure out they needed to go in on-premise, was that to an on-premise version of S/4HANA? Was it some other system?
They're a customer that hired someone to build them a specific ERP. And they spent years trying to build that ERP, $4 or $5 million was spent, and they could never get it to work. There's millions of lines of code. They couldn't get it to work. So when I talked to them, I said, I don't understand why you're trying to build an ERP. Let's just buy a standard ERP where 90% of it works. And then just the 10% that is specific to your industry, I'll customize that for you. They didn't buy a system from me, but they hired me to advise them. And so we put out an RFP. We interviewed Oracle, we interviewed SaaS providers, we interviewed SAP. They actually ended up choosing SAP and implementing it. What they're doing is like 90% of the system is inventory, financials, shipping, receiving, sales, all of that is the standardized, but then they have very specific business processes tailored to their industry, which I would say only 2 or 3 other companies like it exist in the US, at least for them. We have to do a lot of development work to just tailor it for them because they're coming from a system that they, you know, basically homegrown over 25 years where they've really tailored it to work efficiently for them, where they process an order within minutes and throughput is critical for their business. Because of COVID, they had so much business, they're months behind in getting all their business getting done. I guess a lot of people were at home during COVID, you know, buying collectibles. Throughput's super important for them. And they have a very customized system. It was that a choice between S/4HANA Essentials or Extended, which is basically their multi-tenant and single-tenant options, or buying an on-premise system and hosting it on site, or buying an on-premise system and hosting it through SAP or a hyperscaler. And so they ended up buying an on-premise system and hosting it on AWS.
Cloud deployment options, you know, there's so many now, private cloud, hosted, single tenant, multi-tenant SaaS, et cetera. In some cases, it seemed to me that some of it barely qualifies as cloud, especially if the application is really the fully on-premises, the full on-premises code base. So I'm wondering, is there a sweet spot, or like you might say a Goldilocks, you know, just right option, where clients can get many of the benefits of cloud, such as scalability, flexibility, save money on IT and all that, but with few of the drawbacks of cloud apps, especially, you know, the multi-tenant ones, which typically can't be customized, as you pointed out, in some cases they have fewer features. So given all that, is there one combination that is ideal for a lot of people?
I can't answer that saying it's ideal because it all depends on the company, the size of the company, the industry they're in, their business processes. I look at each company individually. And so we get literally hundreds of RFPs every year that we respond to. And because we sell different versions of SAP, cloud versions, on-premise versions, business by design, we have to look at each RFP and say, okay, for this customer, this is the best approach that we're going to offer them. I have some large customers that we've worked with, Avnet, Danlog Devices, in the past, Levi Strauss, Bridgestone Tire, those big organizations, I don't think are at least not for the foreseeable future going to a SaaS. They're sticking to their either an on-premise version or an on-premise hosted version. Smaller customers, mid-sized customers, they're going to, you know, SaaS. Almost every RFP that we see that comes out these days is looking for a SaaS version. If it's a new company, a small company, mid-sized company, definitely they're looking at a SaaS. Because a few years ago, I was responding to these RFPs with SAP's on-premise S/4HANA, and we were losing every single time because the thing was, it was too expensive. You know, we were comparing an on-premise implementation for a small company against a SaaS. It was apples and oranges. I was going up and, you know, responding to RFE, saying yes to all of the requirements, and we could meet all the requirements with the on-premise version. But I was looking at a year and a half implementation, $10 million for a fairly small company, which is a big investment. And the SaaS companies were coming in and doing it at a fraction of my cost. So even though I was demoing well, they loved the product, we were meeting all the requirements, just on a purely cost factor, we were losing. We switched to SaaS. We started just offering SaaS to the smaller companies.
Are many of those greenfield implementations where they've never had an ERP?
Yes. All the companies today that are sending me RFPs, you know, different industries, especially if they're in the smaller mid-sized customers, they're looking for a SaaS. And I'm competing against other SaaS. So I'm bidding a SaaS. So for this insurance company that we just won just a couple of months ago, we bid against other SaaS implementers. And they, you know, they looked at our price and they said, you guys are still more expensive than these other guys. And I was like, yeah, but look at all the features and functionality you're getting. But they're like looking at the price and looking at these other guys and they have to compare. Well, we're paying even at that price, which I thought was phenomenally low for an SAP implementation. They were still saying, well, I could go here and still go lower. And so it was a push and pull to convince them, hey, you're getting more functionality. You're getting more billions of dollars in R&D and all that kind of stuff in the future. But at any rate, it's a price war out there now. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can't really sell to a small, mid-sized company an on-premise product unless they're, again, like a very customized, specific business that I can't, you know, meet the requirements up with a SaaS, then I have to go with an on-premise.
Yeah. So I almost feel like I interrupted you earlier. You said you switched to SaaS. She was starting to say something about how.
Oh, yes. Your company,
yeah.
So a couple of years ago, and I saw this coming in the horizon just because we do so many RFPs and we saw what the industry was coming to. And we saw where SAP was going to when they bought SuccessFactors. It's totally a cloud product. Mm-hmm. So basically with SuccessFactors, they're saying you have to move to the cloud. Right? They're saying, you know, all of our HR, all of our payroll functionality is going to the cloud and you have to move to the cloud. I was selling projects where I had 50 people on site for 2 years on a project. You know, I'm not selling those big projects as much anymore. What I have now is people at working at home, working on multiple projects at the same time on SaaS projects. So my model is changing. And in fact, a little bit of a disruption with us in the last couple of years because our revenue has come down because we were doing these huge projects and we were billing $20 million or on a project, right? Just, you know, hey, boom. Now I'm selling, you know, a $200,000 project, a $500,000 project, a $50,000 project on a SaaS project. But my sales cost hasn't gone down. I still need demo people. I still need salespeople. I still need proposal writers. So when I spend as much time doing a $200,000 sale as a $20 million sale, having to do the demos and respond to the RFP, the model changes quite a bit. And so what I'm relying on the fact is that our license revenue is building up year over year, and then going to be relying on that recurring license revenue rather than that big upfront consulting engagement that I used to get. The industry is changing and we have to change with it. Yeah. So we move to mostly more of our projects are SaaS now versus on-premise.
It's interesting for me because several times I've written about that from the vendor point of view. I remember Luka Mucic, you know, the CFO, the SAP CFO talking about that during some earnings calls. And then other people like at Oracle have talked about this, how there's, and I think IDC and others have written about a trough. Revenue is going down, but you haven't quite reached.
And that's exactly what I've seen. So our revenues have come down in the last couple of years. Our costs have gone up, you know, in terms of, so I need demo people and salespeople for SuccessFactors. I need them for Ariba. I need them for Business by Design. I need them for, you know, S/4HANA and all these things. So I have more people out there demoing, selling different products, Concur, and so on. Because the projects are smaller, the percentage of cost being allocated to getting the sale is higher. So in fact, I'm probably losing money on my sales, you know, in the initial first couple of years, with the hope that as the license revenue builds up over time, you know, I'll be riding that recurring license base. You know, the first year I might have 500,000, but after, you know, in the second year, maybe it's 2 million and the next year it's 5 million. And so my recurring should be higher. That's hoping that will happen, you know, because I've seen some companies, some of my competitors have gone out of business. I mean, we've hired a couple of people who had their own businesses and they couldn't ride it out for the couple of years because their sales costs had exceeded their implementation and they had to get out.
That's an important aspect of the whole cloud migration, the SAP cloud migration and the other ERP vendors. Is there a most popular deployment option among Phoenix's clients? Sort of getting back to this cloud deployment option question. Is there one that's the most popular?
For smaller customers, it'll be the cloud, right? So it's fast, it's cheap, they get a return on investment immediately, and for the most part, they're able to standardize their business processes. You know, I would say under $1 billion for sure, right? Those customers are all migrating to cloud. Now, if they're over $1 billion, $2 billion, so on, then they're looking at, you know, single tenant or on-premise hosted or on-premise managed implementation. And they can afford it, you know, usually, and they have more complex business practices and they're still doing that. A lot of my customers are still reluctant to go to the cloud. There's still some hesitancy to move to the cloud, whether, sometimes it's security, you know, they're not comfortable with putting their stuff on the cloud. Sometimes it's giving up some functionality that they built over time in their system. And now they will lose that. You know, I was able to do exactly this. I was able to check my budget in exactly this manner. And I have to go to a standardized business process now, and they don't like that. And so they want to try to build that same functionality on the cloud. And it's not a good model if you've got too many of those things. If there are a couple of those things, sure, we could do it. But if it becomes a huge laundry list, it's better not to do that.
Yeah. Since you have customers who want to stay with SAP ECC, what does Phoenix do to help them modernize ERP or at least keep it running? I've heard that you can extend it, I think, with SAP Cloud Platform. And then there's other issues about, you know, kind of maintenance and maybe other things you can do to at least keep it running efficiently for what they have. What does Phoenix do for that?
So some of my customers, you know, especially those that had really big implementations and they just don't want to go, they don't want to go from ECC to S/4HANA right now. One of my customers, I was talking to him recently and he said, let's do this after I retire because I don't have to do this again. You know, he just didn't want to have to do it again. He said it was so traumatic the first time that he implemented. He wanted someone else to deal with it. So he's like, I'm waiting until I retire and then you can deal with these guys coming behind me. Let them deal. Some of the issues I'm facing, people have spent a lot of money on their systems. They may not, you know, and some of them might have implemented recently, like three, maybe 5 years ago. And now I'm coming back to them and saying, hey, let's spend some more money and migrate. And they might not like that. Others just, you know, I guess they'll have a couple of options. So one is they migrate to S/4HANA. They might put out an RFP. Like they might look at other options, which is a risk for SAP. You know, they might, some customers might say, let's look at what else is in the market. But these customers, they are the ones that stay on the system. What we're doing for them is doing a roadmap exercise with them. So we're sitting down with them and saying, look, you know, in 2025, if you want to migrate, but you want to keep your payroll, you have to go to SAP Sidecar and have to bifurcate your systems. Right. If you want to go after 2027 and you want to still keep your systems, you're going to extended maintenance. And this is, you know, what extended maintenance means. And so we do individualized roadmaps for customers to kind of give them the idea, because my fear is that with some key dates come and I have maybe 150 customers who have implemented in the last 23 years, and the majority of them haven't upgraded yet. If they all come to me like a year before some of these deadline dates and tell me, hey, we need to upgrade, I'm not going to have the staff to do that. And neither is anybody else. Like none of my competitors will either. So I'm trying to tell some customers, hey, you might want to upgrade now and kind of beat the curve and, you know, get better pricing and better, you know, service doing it now. Because my true belief is if all these customers want to upgrade all at the same time, I'm not going to have the resources to service them. And neither is anybody else. I mean, there's going to be more demand out there than, and of course, that's assuming SAP doesn't extend the dates again, but, you know, they have been doing that. So
it sounds like realistically, there's not much that can be done to have the cake and eat it too, and like add a lot of features to an existing ECC.
Yeah, I mean, they're still doing all the stuff like support packs and you know, annual support packs and building functionality. And some of it is that they're working on the cloud stuff first, But then that's those same things are building it back on the on-premise system. So there is still some activity going on the on-premise system, not as much as in the past, because a lot of that new R&D money is going towards the cloud. And quite frankly, SAP is missioning and incentivizing its salespeople to sell cloud and, you know, urging its partner community to sell cloud and so on. So
when you say some of the R&D does make it way back, are we only talking the on-premises version of S/4HANA, or is it also ECC?
Not on ECC as much. Yeah, you know, they are still making some changes, but not as much on ECC. Definitely on the S/4HANA on-premise. That's definitely coming back, yes.
Phoenix Business Consulting also does SAP Business by Design implementations. Yes. So I'm wondering, when does it make sense for a client of yours to opt for Business by Design?
If you're a small company, I would say under 500 million for sure. Mm-hmm. But if you're a small company, and we've done professional services, we've done even like things like pharmaceuticals and local government, things like that. If you're a small company and you want to, you have standardized business processes, Business by Design might be a good fit for you because it's cheaper than S/4HANA. So it's a good price point for, let's say, a $100 million company that doesn't have a lot of support staff and they want something that's, you know, pretty out of the box. We're doing an implementation for a school district and it's being done in 6 weeks. So we're, you know, starting the project, ending in 6 weeks. We're charging them very little money. And a lot of the training is out of the box. The test scripts are out of the box. It's very easy to implement and set up, and you're ready to go. And it has some nice features too. You have things like stuff that even S/4HANA doesn't have, like scanning capabilities completely built in. Some really nice integration with some other tools like Excel and so on. And so they have some nice features specifically for Business by Design, which I was really surprised to find. But you know, we've demoed it. It's very competitive. And it's a lot cheaper to implement licensing and so on. So for a small company, you don't have a lot of complex requirements. Mm-hmm. This is a good tool for you. If you're above 500 million, you have a lot of users, you have a lot of complicated requirements, then you got a more robust package. The S/4HANA has more robust functionality. Definitely, you know, if you want to be able to do a lot more in terms of capabilities in the system and flexibility, then you want to go to S/4HANA.
You also get involved in implementing SuccessFactors, which you mentioned, and Concur, sure, and maybe some of the others. So the latter two that I mentioned are cloud products that SAP acquired quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. There's been some criticism that they maybe haven't integrated those products very well into the rest of the product line. Christian Klein, the CEO himself, has admitted that as much and made it a priority to do that. So in your opinion, Hanif, how good is SAP's integration of its cloud platforms?
I think some of that criticism is valid, especially early on. We experienced some integration issues and having to go to a customer and say, we're demoing different products and they look different. Say SuccessFactors looks different than S/4HANA and a Business by Design and Concur and so on. So the look and feel is different. The integration sometimes is difficult between certain products or was difficult between certain products. It's getting better. I can see it every year getting better and they are doing more integrations. They're putting everything on the same look and feel through a Fiori experience. They're doing unified inbox so that, you know, if you're working on one product, another product, you can still get it all in one inbox. So they are making strides, but early on and in some cases still, I had to, you know, tell clients, oh, we have to download stuff and then upload stuff from one SAP product to another SAP product. It's not a good sell. So they're like, well, you're both SAP products. Why is this not a cleaner integration? But it is getting more and more integrated. I can see it from year to year that there are dramatic changes every year, and I can see them moving towards that. Virtually, you know, a couple of times a year, I see some improvements with their cloud technology platform.
So looking at it from the other side of the coin, is there anything that sticks out at you as areas that they really need to focus on integrating? You've mentioned some of the good ways that the integration is showing up, like with the user experience and all that through Fiori. Yeah. Is there certain things that are critical, like maybe how financials integrated, or I'm just sort of guessing here, areas that you feel are really critical that maybe they should focus on?
There are still gaps I know they're working on those gaps, but there are still gaps that I see. Like, for example, I mentioned we implement business by design. There are some integration gaps between, let's say, business by design and SuccessFactors, or business by design and SAC, and so on. For certain products, I still see some gaps in integration. I know they have it on their roadmap and they're working on it, but you know, as of today, there are still some gaps. Some specific functionality for certain industries. We've done a lot of work in state and local government, and I know that some, for example, specific functionality for state and local government that we're still working on. You know, so for certain specific industries, some of that is still a gap, but I think, you know, maybe in 6 months, a year, those gaps might be closed. So they're moving really quickly on some of those gaps.
Right at the beginning of the year, SAP made a pretty big splash with this Rise with SAP service or program. Is that something that Phoenix participates in?
Yes, it's a big push by SAP. But one thing it's going to result in is more cloud revenue for SAP, because the salespeople are incentivized to sell it. The partner community is really being incentivized to push that Rise with SAP. It is good for customers in that it gives them a cloud subscription pricing. Even if you have like an on-premise system, you're still getting cloud subscription pricing, basically in a bundled pricing model with hosting and services included. You know, there are still some things that SAP has to work around in terms of incentivizing partners to sell it. As an example, I have a lot of customers that we host on Amazon with Web Services. Like we're hosting these customers. So SAP wants me to sell them on Rise, where they move that functionality to SAP and bring all that into SAP. In some cases, that's going to be good. In other cases, it might be cheaper to keep them on the same platform. But as a partner, you know, if I'm losing a lot of basis revenue and hosting revenue, it's hard for me to go to a customer and say, hey, I'm charging you $50,000 a month for hosting, but let's put you on Rise pricing, you know, where I'm making a lot less in terms of revenue. So I think that SAP still has some things to work out in terms of incentivizing its partners to push it. But I see it as a good thing for some customers, and we're definitely selling it to customers, and we have sold Rise pricing since it came out. I think the end result is we might be surprised in the next couple of quarters. SAP's license revenue, I think, will start to grow, because when they go to Rise pricing, you have a choice of hyperscaler. You can go to Amazon Web Services, you can go to Azure, or you can go to HEC, SAP's own data centers. And if the customer doesn't care, you know, they'll go to SAP data services centers. And I think internally, SAP will get better pricing. And as a stock price thing, I think there might be some surprises in terms of, because they're really pushing it, and I see customers adopting it.
Certainly, they've been saying to the press, and I think during the earnings calls, they've been claiming to have some pretty good wins and some pretty good uptake right now already.
Yeah. And I know I'm in a lot of these calls with SAP and talking to SAP sales reps, and everything is Rise pricing right now. So they want you to sell it. They want you to push it. The salespeople are incentivized to sell it. And so I do feel that it will take hold in the market. Customers are asking me about it as well. So the customers are getting a message, same kind of message.
How does it differ from either past offerings, either from you folks or from SAP itself? It's not the first time that there's been an effort to, it does seem like it's a consolidating and a packaging of things, and having one contact person in theory and all that, all the things that they said about Rise. A lot of them do seem to be new and different. Is that the main way that it differs from what they've done in the past?
Just like you, I've seen a lot of different iterations over the past 30 years. I think the whole cloud push and subscription pricing is more prevalent now. You know, in the past, I would sell a customer like a $2 million license fee up front. And that might be a lot for a customer to pay, and then $400,000 in, you know, maintenance fees going forward. But if they can take a subscription price annually and kind of spread that out over a number of years, and also bundle their hardware and all of that all into one more absorbable, chunkable price annually, rather than having upfront cost of buying hardware, upfront cost of buying licenses, and spread it out over 5 years. I think that's probably the biggest advantage, you know, selling point for Rise. Also, you know, having the one point of contact, as you said, and some additional incentives thrown in to a customer and to a partner to sell that. What's different now is that subscription pricing is really, it's become more common, right? It's very common now. When I go to some of my competitors, I was just looking at some bids that we lost, and the competitor actually doesn't charge for an implementation. They just kind of bundled it into their subscription cost. And then they said, hey, once we sell this, we're doing the implementation ourselves and we're going to keep that customer for 10-20 years. Let's just bundle the implementation in into somewhere into the licensing. And so I'm competing against with a license price and an implementation price, while someone else has bundled it into the software price. So it's more absorbable for the customer. And so I lost that, and I've lost that a couple of times. So, you know, maybe that's something SAP should be thinking about as well. But I know I've lost a couple of deals like that. And so I can't compete when I'm saying, hey, this is going to be an X million dollar project plus your license, where someone else is just charging them a license and kind of building that implementation price over the long run into the license.
So when you say maybe SAP would look into that or do something about it, what could they do? Can they structure the program such that they can try to bring more standardization so that it's more of a level playing field? Is that what you're hoping for, or is it something different?
Well, it might be something we have to do as well, like as terms of implementation. Maybe we have to spread it out over 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. As long as we sign a 5-year contract, maybe we have to spread out our implementation cost or 10 years. Or if we get better license pricing, where we could kind of bundle it all together into one price with implementation and licensing.
I see. Okay. Better licensing pricing from SAP would help.
Always the hope. It's always the hope.
Right.
So
you are a certified public accountant and you have really deep and long experience in finance. A lot of SAP customers have started their S/4HANA cloud migration with S/4HANA Finance. Why is starting with the finance module of S/4HANA, why is that such an effective approach?
One of the things is that you really need to build your account structures first, and with everything else is based on your GL accounts, your cost center structure, your org structure, all of that stuff you should probably put in first before you put in, for example, payroll and HR and other things, because they're really relying on that accounting thing. You don't want to, let's say, put in payroll first, set everything up, and then find when you're doing the account structures and you want to change the account structures or redo them, you have to go back and redo your payroll implementation where it hits accounting. So in a lot of ways, you know, we recommend probably putting in your financials first and then maybe your procurement if they want to do it in stages. And then with SuccessFactors, it's modular. So that can go in based on a company's pain points. They need something put in first or other, but usually we would put in something like payroll after we put in the accounting because it's relying on those structures. But if they want to put in something like recruiting or onboarding or something like that, you know, that's modular. We can put that in anytime.
So how easy is it to actually add the modules, especially from the customer or client point of view? Is that an easy process?
Yeah, we found it pretty easy. I guess I go back, you know, having been in this business 30 years, I'm kind of surprised how cheap some of these implementations are now, where I can do all of the HR functionality for a customer in a couple hundred thousand, where, you know, the cheapest I could do it was a couple of million before. As I said earlier, there is no other path other than a cloud-based system now for SAP's HR. You know, SuccessFactors is it. They're telling their customers, you are going to move to SuccessFactors, you know, whether, you know, it's in a couple of years or if you want to extend your system through extended maintenance until 2030. But at some point, this is the only thing you're going to be using. It's cloud-based HR, you know, and so HR and payroll. So customers are having to migrate.
I think it's probably a fair statement to say that SAP, like pretty much every ERP vendor that has a large installed base of on-premises or legacy systems, has struggled a bit to move its customers to the cloud. How do you think SAP is doing in that regard?
It depends on, I guess, the size of customer, industry of customer. I mentioned we do a lot of state and local government, and they're very risk averse. Talking to one customer, the majority of my customers, I would say more than 90-95% have been upgraded or moved to the cloud, or, you know, they're still on their ECC systems. And they're waiting for other people to do it first, right? So they're waiting, once, you know, 20 people have done it, then I'll do it, you know, kind of thing. Or once enough people have done it, then I'll do it. The smaller customers, they're finding it easy to move to the cloud, finding it easy to upgrade. The larger customers, eventually, I think they will. I mean, I think it's only a matter of time. And I think that will start coming faster and faster. But it's going to take a couple of years.
Is there anything more that you think SAP could be doing to speed up that process?
I think we're at the point in some industries for some customers where in terms of getting people to start moving, this is a hard sell to SAP and to some firms, but you know, maybe give people a great deal to move, right? And so, you know, incentivize, you know, enough people to move so that other people can say, hey, look, things are moving and people are moving to the cloud. We even talked about it saying, hey, let's buy a couple of projects. Let's, you know, give a great deal to some customers, have them move to the cloud. Then when someone says, hey, you know, who else has done it? We can point to all these other customers that have done it and say, okay, now it's your turn kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That would be that my biggest advice to, you know, and I've said that to, you know, SAP as well. I said, you know, hey, let's incentivize some customers, give them, swap some licenses, make some deals, get them to the cloud. And then once you get a momentum going, all the rest will start coming in as well.
I think one of the things, since maybe you pride yourself on is knowing about SAP best practices, like the implementation best practices, maybe not, probably industry best practices too, but I think we're talking here about how to do an SAP project well, yes, including the system reviews. I don't know if it's possible to name one thing, but could you say what the most common mistake is that companies make in not following best practices when they do their SAP deployments?
You know, I don't think there's any one common thing. And I've been through this exercise a lot of times over the last 30 years. We started out with some things like SAP's done a lot of similar type things. It used to be like pre-configured clients. We had IDIS systems, we had model companies, and now we have, you know, best practices content. You know, that's what it is now. But a lot of these things didn't work, like pre-configured companies. I've been to a lot of, you know, lawsuits where various vendors have been sued for pre-configured companies, and I've had to come in as an expert witness and review their best practices and say why they didn't work, or, you know, because they were trying to fit something like a round peg and, you know, box into a round peg and try to make it, you know, work for a company, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. But I think SAP has come to the point currently where their best practices really are best practices, and customers have to change their mindset. If they can accommodate those best practices, which they should try to do, right? You know, if you're in an industry and every other company in that industry can follow those best practices, how are you so different that you have to do things like a completely different way, right? So if they can change their mindset and saying, look, let's adopt those best practices, and that will save me money in the long run, having to change my technology platform all the time, and maybe even improve my business operations by adopting to these best practices. If they can adopt that mindset, I think that will save them in ROI, in being able to upgrade their systems, and being able to maintain their systems, and give them real rate of return. So when I look at lawsuits and failed projects and things like that, because I've been an expert witness, you know, more than 20 times on failed projects. When I review those projects, I look at it and I say, you know, what went wrong? It's you know, failure to adopt to best practices, or it's failure of the implementer to understand what those best practices are and be able to, and maybe customize the system too much, being told, hey, do this in a certain way, and not being able to show the customer options where they could accommodate to those best practices. You know, when a customer comes to me and says, hey, I want to do it a certain way, I'll give them five different options and reasons why that their way is not the best, right? If another consultant comes in and says, you want to do it this way, let's do it this way. Mm-hmm. That's what leads to problems. You know, lots of customized systems, too far customized.
I see. It sounds like when push comes to shove, especially in these lawsuits, it's the failure to follow, let's call them business best practices, or either industry best practices or business process best practices, like maybe how to do invoicing or procurement or certain things that are, you can do with the software versus a best practice in project management? Let's say, you know, scope creep or budget.
It's all of those things, because I've seen, you know, best practice, I've seen poor project management, I've seen abysmal training, I've seen terrible testing. Mm-hmm. So testing is actually one of the things where people rush to go live and they haven't properly tested the system. And then when they go live, they can't ship their product, their warehouses. They don't know what anything is in the warehouse because their available promises out of whack and so on. So, you know, if I were to say some of the things that I've seen most often, one thing is like overall project management, how a project is governed and managed and how customers manage, because the customer needs to be managed as well. You're the expert. You can't let a customer go astray because they're relying on you to make sure the project is run. If they're paying you $50 million, $100 million, in one case, $500 million to implement a system, and you can't govern that project and manage that project, there's a problem on the implementer's side. Because really, I've seen some projects, it would be cheaper to send a person to the moon than to implement that system. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether that's SAP or Oracle or, you know, Infor or whatever it is, Dynamics or whatever it is, that expert, purported expert, should know how to manage a project. Yeah. You know, 'cause that's what they're being paid for.
Well, honey, this sounds like a good place to end things.